All right, welcome back, folks, to another episode of the QS Cast. Tarkan and myself, Chaz, joining as always. What is up, Tark?
What's going on, man?
Well, not good maybe as always. You. Yeah, not maybe as always, but we are here ready to cast. But yeah, sometimes our schedules just conflict, but we try to do this as much as. You know, we try to do this like as convenient as we can for the insiders. I try to fill the void when I can with quick casts and stuff in that nature, flash casts. In lieu of doing a flash cast,
I think one of these days I'm just gonna pop in random flash. I think I should do that just for fun.
Yeah, they're really quick. I mean, normally it's just one topic. It's very quick. We try to cover. An important topic that's like trending or, something that may have happened or, some crazy spoiler dropped or some crazy ban list discussion or BNR announcement. Just it's those type of topics that you'll find in those casts. And then like maybe there's a pick in there, but cards that we try to focus on for the QS tracker, the cast tracker. But those new infographics are up. You can see those in the Insider Discord. Huge props and big shout out to Guillaume and Diego for putting those together. There's definitely a new theme. There's another graph or another chart that breaks down things even further. Really well done on that. It's awesome to have that transparency. And you can find the article up on the website and you can see, Guillaume's analysis for that. So that's going to be awesome. Does a great job.
Amazing.
Yeah. Destroying Tarkan for sure on these sets. I think that goes without saying. Some of those stuffs are really haunting some of those cards that we talked about are just haunting us in the 30, 60, 90 graphs. We have a new graph that really kind of breaks down things even further in when we talk in terms of like just the number of cards that increase by a percentage and just the number of cards that decrease per percentage. So you can see just like the individual cards and what category those fall into. I think that really helps helps folks follow along with what's going on. But I was talking about Flashcast because we had, I kind of tried to solicit for some topics and some of the topics that came up are really good, but they have to do with the reserve list. So that's kind of like our forte on this cast that we've been talking about this for so long that, and honestly, some of the insiders did bring this up and it kind of, made me realize that not all of, some of them are newer, some folks that, have subbed into the, insider service are newer. They may not have heard us for as long talking about these particular subjects. So, that does make sense. And, I don't try to, alienate them and not, try to talk about a topic when they want it covered. I do get that. But, we have talked about these topics a lot and they are archived, but, we will try to discuss that very briefly and maybe from another perspective or another like angle from this that maybe folks haven't thought about. That's kind of what we try to do with that. In addition to, the kind of the frenzy that's been going on, I think, an insider, Christopher, brought up, I think a really good topic is an overview, because we do talk about this a lot on the cast, an overview of this kind of cyclical site or the cycle, these cyclical kind of points of interest throughout the year in terms of the Magic market. And I think that was a really good suggestion. So that's something that we're going to cover because I think that's really beneficial. So really great suggestion there.
Yeah, no, totally. I think a lot of people could benefit from knowing a lot of the newer subs or kind of just learning how the as far as Magic, because there is a predictable pattern and it's been going on for a while. And some people may think that, oh my gosh, what's happening now is insane. And this happened last year and in years past, and things do change in the cycle and things kind of evolve, but there is definitely kind of a predictable pattern.
Yeah, there's definitely some things that remain the same, but as they release newer product, as they release these different kind of sets and whatnot, it kind of can throw monkey wrenches into this kind of these patterns. But mostly they're we've kind of identified them and have talked about them in the past, especially when it comes to you know, hype points of interest, like standard sets and that nature. I know some folks don't really get in a standard, but that is like just an example that we'll get into. But in terms of, so let's just dive right into the reserve list stuff, because this is going to be a normal cast and maybe a little longer, but I want to try to get everything in. So let's just jump back into this reserve list kind of quote unquote madness. And really, I think this is just an extension of what's been happening with masterpieces. So now it's pretty much the reserve list yet again. We saw this kind of really, it's kind of happened over the years. Like, there is kind of these periods where folks right around like tax return, where they have this kind of extra money in the springtime to really, you know, pick up a lot of these reserve list stuff. But really it turned into a real frenzy the last like 3 or so years, this one included, where you'll open up like these stock sites where you'll see like MTG stocks or whatever, you know, you see on these, you know, Goldfish or whatever that are tracking prices. And you'll see these like absurd percentage increases on some of this stuff. And like, you're like, oh my God, like it's happening all over again. But realistically, I mean, Tarkan and I were talking about this, and it sends folks into this age old question of the reserve list and what we're going to do with that. And I think really what I kind of narrowed this down to in terms of frustration at the reserve list and Magic players is basically the stuff that they need for like pretty much Commander decks. So really what I'm talking about is by and large the dual lands and some like knick-knack cards, like, well, I mean, not knick-knack in terms of prices because they're like insane at this point, but Gaia's Cradle, stuff like that. Because no one really, to me, no one really makes a huge deal about black, like cards like, which are on the reserve list, but no one really wants to bring those up. You know, Time Twister, Black Lotus, the Power Nine, Moxes and stuff like that. I don't ever really hear an outrage that, you know, Time Twister is a $2,000 card. Why? Because no one really cares to own like that. You know, it's always just kind of these upper echelon reserve list cards that are in their own kind of category in this kind of nebulous that people don't really care about, even as long as I've been playing the game. And I've been playing the card like half my life. It's kind of like, you know, Black Lotus, this card that's a Magic card. It's on the reserve list. But you don't really like care much about this card, right? And that can be said about some of these other cards that, yeah, you can use them in these kind of day-to-day, you know, Magic, but by and large, a large portion of the Magic community doesn't. So really where I've kind of dissected this kind of whole doom and gloom, look at this reserve list, you know, it's blowing up again, it's bad for the game, really only boils down to like 10 cards. Or, you know, the dual lands, which is, I guess, 10 cards, whatever, but, and some other cards that people really like to play for reserve lists. I mean, people don't care that, you know, Elvish Farmer, that a card that recently spiked is like $8, because realistically, in a year's time, no one's going to care about that card anymore. It's going to go right back to like $2 or $3 maybe. That's still a large percentage of where it was before that, but these kind of discussions about this reserve list, they aren't with cards like Elvish Farmer and cards like that, you know, Wormwood Tree Folk, you know, those kind of reserve list cards in mind. They actually aren't even, they don't really actually have to do with cards like Time Twister or the Abyss or stuff like that, because again, these cards were the kind of carrot on the stick for a lot of Magic folks. You know, they're there, you know, maybe one day I want to own them, but I don't really care about it as much. I really just want like the cards that make my EDH deck stronger on a baseline level. And that's basically the dual lands. So, you know, when I kind of dissect that argument, to me, it's easier for folks to wrap around, and especially me, that you just want dual lands off the reserve list. You just want dual lands to be able to play your EDH list. And I guess, you know, that's more of a valid argument and it's fair and I can agree with that. But even then, realistically, you know, given a 100-card deck, the percentage min-maxing here that we're talking about in terms of a dual lands increases your maybe win percentage by such a minuscule percentage at this point, especially given all the stuff that they printed over the years, like shock lands and the battle, you know, for Zendikar lands. You can fetch those, you know, it doesn't feel as good, but, you know, there's so much stuff to interchange those cards with that I'm just starting to, it's just starting to lose, you know, the interest and the steam for me, where it's like, you know, just Magic players being Magic players complaining about something about Magic that, you know, and this is just, that's definitely not changed for me.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you as far as, you know, the arguments that people make against the reserve list that are usually revolved around, oh, accessibility to players, because 90% of the reserve list, nobody really cares about, like you said, as far as play. There might be a few things here and there that people do care about, but 90% of the reserve list also isn't $500 or $1,000, right? Most of the reserve list is a good chunk of the reserve list is fairly affordable, you know? So I don't think people are going to be complaining about $6 reserve list cards or $8 reserve list cards. Like you said, everyone's complaints about accessibility with the reserve list always boil down to the dual lands and maybe some of the power vintage. And, you know, in EDH and Commander, there's so many substitutes, and those are, by and large, obviously casual formats. So your play group, people aren't going to be trying to hyper-optimize to get that extra win percentage. They will in something like Legacy. And unfortunately, I do believe that Underground Sea is going to be $1,000. And I think that eventually. And I think that Legacy might eventually be, you know, priced out for most people. And I think Legacy could end up becoming sort of the next vintage. I see that as completely possible due to the need of dual lands. You have to have dual lands to be competitive in Legacy. And it's possible that a lot of players get priced out of Legacy because of that. So, but by and large, the reserve list itself, the arguments against it, I think I think wear thin on me as well. Listen, it is what it is. The cards are going to continue to go up. And everything we're seeing here with all these buyouts and whatnot, I'm a little iffy on how much a lot of this may end up sticking, because I think the buyouts are happening a little deeper than they did last year. It's about the same, but it seems like there's a little bit more. And I think what's happened is everyone's, I don't know why, maybe it's a combination of different content creators and just things that are said in the community. But, you know, I think by and large, the player base is coming to realize that, well, get these cards now or they're just going to keep going up. And if I want them even to collect them, or if I just want to finish play sets of blah, 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 and just have stuff, might as well get it now or else it's going to go up. Or, hey, people are buying it. And if I want to make money or on it, I need to get it now or I'm going to miss out on it, blah, blah, blah. So my biggest concern with what's happened now, though, with the results is that I think there's a lot of non-Magic player-based money that's coming into this segment of the market. You know, people who made some money on cryptocurrency or whatever. And I'm not saying that this is going to happen, but I mentioned this in the Discord, and you know, I think it was misinterpreted by Jeremy and some other people. But you know, it is wholly possible that there is a short-term reserveless bubble whereby guy who buys 1,000 Ancestral Knowledges, I'm just throwing out a random example, decides, okay, cool, it's hit the point that I want, and now I'm just going to go ahead and flood the market. Not because he understands that he shouldn't flood the market, because he thinks, well, you know what, as long as I make 10%, 15%, I'm good. And then he dumps them all back in the market. Not saying that's going to happen, but it's certainly plausible when you have people that aren't familiar with the marketplace and just see it as a right place to make money. It can happen. So I do not think that Magic as a whole, by any means at all, I don't think this is any indication of a Magic bubble for the industry of Magic, the business of Magic. But I do think it's possible that there is a short term, like some of these really random reserve list cards could end up crashing back down. It's certainly possible because a bunch of people start dumping them. That being said, this is going to happen again in the future. Cards are going to go up. Even if they crash, they're going to get bought out. They're going to go up again. This is part of, and we'll talk about it later on the cast, but this is part of the yearly cycle. And it's just going to keep happening. And the reserve list is just going to keep going up. So at the end of the day, the golden rule of the reserve list is buy it sooner than later. Whatever you want, buy it sooner than later. There might be some soft caps as to how high cards can go, but that's on the high end. You know, that's for something like perhaps dual lands, where it's like, you know, there's so many revised dual lands. There's, I think, 275,000 dual lands in print. And, you know, when you have a supply of 275,000, you can only have so many. Like, it can't really stay at $1,000. It's very difficult. The comparison I try and make is in comic books. You have limited edition comic books that have maybe, I was looking at, I think, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which was the first edition of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles had, I think, like 300, 700 copies or something that still exist that are gem mint.
And I think it's like $20,000. So if you extrapolate that, you know, 275, it's it might be tough for Dual Lands to stick, revised Dual Lands, for all of them to stick at $1,000. But I do think marquee ones will get there. I think Underground Sea will be $1,000 and will hold that price. Simply due to that, the fact that Magic has utility as game pieces as opposed to just being a collectible, right? Dual Lands, people want to play with them as well as collect them. So anyways, I feel like I say this every cast, but not to beat a dead horse in the reserve list, but this shouldn't shock anybody. There's a lot of opportunity with the reserve list. It is the best place to park long-term money, period. It is the place to put, if you want to have a long-term collection, frankly, just buy reserve list cards. It's all you got to do. And obviously don't, if you go out and buy Time Twister, don't expect to double up tomorrow. But if you go out and buy these penny stock reserve lists, these ones that are $1, 50 cents, $2, yeah, at any point in time, they could get hit. Somebody, you know, they could go up in price. It's absolutely possible. So, and to your point about people complaining about the reserve list, Chaz, the reserve list is not going anywhere. And here's my reasoning why I think it will never go anywhere is that all this kind of secondary market attention that the reserve list brings to itself is a net positive for Wizards. Okay,
that was a very good point that you made.
It's good. It's good for the game. As much as people don't want to believe that, but it's good for Wizards of the Coast when they have this thriving second, this segment of cards that just tons of growth, and people feel like, wow, my collection is going shooting up in value. This is all really good. It seems like it's not, but it is actually very good for the company as far as Magic as a business. So they have no incentive to get rid of it. Why get rid of the reserve list? What, so that Dual Lands can come back into? They have plenty of replacements for Dual Lands. They have these new Battle Lands are like, they're perfectly fine to play as Dual Lands.
Yeah. And I didn't want to cut off your point there.
No. Yeah. So when people say, Wizards, you know, they're going to get rid of the reserve, you know, there's just so much money to be made. No, there is more long-term value in them to maintain the reserve list than there is for any show. And the game's not dying. It's not going anywhere. Yeah, I know people were talking about, like, oh, there was a 20% drop in product sales and all that. Listen, that is cyclical. And that's evidence of maybe bad product. That doesn't mean that the game or the business or the industry is dying. No, look at Dominaria. Dominaria's sales have blown it out of the water. So
yeah, and take that point of interest and apply it to what's been happening. You know, yes, this kind of time period that we're in, and we're going to talk about this in a little bit, normally people are buying into this stuff anyway with all the basic, you know, the money that's been handed back to them. You know, they'll most likely just go buy these kind of cards because that's the best way, that's the best bang for your buck in terms of, you know, putting money back into the hobby. But really, you know, Dominaria, and when you have all this interest back into the game, that's a byproduct, you know, this reserve list spending is a byproduct of that. So that kind of just goes, it's a very big cycle, basically, that you talked about, Tarkin. That was a really good point in that, you know, folks come back for Dominaria. They had record-breaking sales. They had record-breaking attendance and pre-release. Subsequently, all this reserve list stuff is getting bought up. So that's just – and that's feeding back into the interest in the game, and ultimately that's a net positive for Wizards. Why would they get rid of the reserve list when, you know, you have folks chasing after these – yes, there's some of them are game pieces, but mostly they're becoming collectibles, like the elusive, you know, Action Comics 1, where, yeah, you could reprint, you could go online and read Action Comics 1. You can buy reprinted copy of Action Comics 1, but you won't actually own the original comic. And that's, you know, and if folks thought about, well, if they just made a reprint of this card or this comic that everyone can read, why there's value in that comic. I mean, there's auctions for that comic that are going on, and eventually a lot of these Magic, you know, these reserve list game pieces or commodities will basically just end up in the way that collectors, you know, X Collector 1 will sell a gem, you know, a 8.5 Time Twister or whatever X, you know, high-end upper echelon reserve list to Y newcomer collector, whatever else. And that's basically what ends up happening. And that happens in a lot of hobbies like this. does it affect the day-to-day growth and playing of the game? No, it absolutely doesn't. And I could count on maybe one hand, barely, if that, that I've seen these, you know, elusive like Mox or even Abyss or whatever that are actually casted in a Commander game. It just doesn't happen.
Well,
and a lot of the time, these newer cards are like, they trump all these reserveless cards. Like half the time, you don't even want some of these reserveless cards that are increasing by this, these crazy percentages. You don't even, there's these cards that trump those cards anyway, and they're not even that powerful. Yeah, they're interesting and they're old and people want to own them, and a lot of FOMO is going on, and I get that. But basically what the discussion that doesn't happen in 6 months is, wow, look at all this stuff like Elvish Farmer that's basically gone back to, you know, $2 or $1 again. Or you see all these crazy percentages that are increasing on MTG stocks, and you think that's the new price of the card. Where realistically, no one is paying that for the new. No one is paying that. I mean, you just look at a card like, you know, Eldamari or the Leaves. I had one. You know, I sold into the hype, but realistically, no one's buying them at 35. So you just keep repricing them less and less and less until finally someone finds the mark that they want to buy these cards at. And you know, yeah, a card like Gaia's Cradle, there's points and no return on some of these cards. You know, the floor on these cards definitely shifts up. And a lot of these reserveless cards that, you know, no one ever really has bought up before to Verscott, or was it Phil's statement there, that, you know, it does seem like a lot more cards are getting bought up. Well, realistically, it's just cards that were dirt cheap that no one really cared to buy before. Yes, the floor moves up a little bit after each one of these frenzies, but realistically, they don't go up that much. So at the end of the day, in like 6 months, you know, yeah, there's a hype going on right now. There's a lot of folks that, this card is just going to keep increasing because it's on the reserve list. Well, really, that's not the case, because when you hear terms like only ever going to go up, that is a huge red flag and indicator for a bubble. And that's pretty much what happens for like a month, you know, 2 months. And then a lot of these cards just start to cool off, like, you know, Elvish Farmer or even Donate or stuff like that. Like, yeah, they're cool. They're interesting. People want to own them, but they're not in the same category as stuff like Dual Lands and Gaia's Cradle and stuff that folks really care about. And that's really what the argument is about. So it really all just boils down to Dual Lands and just the stuff that you want to play, like Gaia's Cradle in your EDH list. Like, people aren't outraged that Elvish Farmer's a quote-unquote $8 card.
Yeah, and you made a really good point, Chaz, about the did you want to continue?
No, and yeah, you'll find folks that will buy at the new prices just because they don't want to miss out on maybe an opportunity that this card increases further, and, you know, they just want to own the card, and folks sell the cards, and that's great and everything, and that's where we come at the reserve list, you know, on this show from that financial angle. But realistically, 90% of the reserve list, a lot of people just really don't care about, and it doesn't affect their day-to-day playing of the game. Magic, you know, as a game, and Wizards as a company, as stewards of the game, has provided so many other outlets and so many other different cards to basically, you know, not have folks worry about this segment of the card pool anymore. Like, yeah, you can sell these reserveless cards into these hype periods, and that's great, but realistically, it doesn't affect the day-to-day playing of this game. It just really doesn't.
Yeah, and there's going to come a point, and you made this great point, Chaz. There's going to come a time when the majority of the people, and honestly, it might even be now.
Yeah, it might even be
realistically,
now.
Realistically. But the majority of the people that are going to be buying and selling these cards are going to be collectors amongst themselves. It's just like the high-end group on Facebook. Most of the product that exchanges hands on the high, and I'm a member. I've been a member of that group a long time. They're a great group, by the way. I love those. Love that whole group. It's a really good team. And I think the coach, Stu, who's part of QS, is a mod over there. But high-end Facebook page, great group. But most of the cards and money that exchanges hands in that group is amongst each other. It's not new player. It's not like players. It's just collectors. You know, going, one guy goes, yeah, I'm bored of this. You know, let me go ahead and move this. And I've had it for a while. It's gone up. There's fewer than that. Let me sell it once. Buy it. Okay, cool. Then person collector Y buys it and holds on to it for a while, then sells it back to collector X. I mean, that's how it's going to work. And realistically, most reserveless cards are going to probably end up going that way. Where you're going to have. I mean, listen. If an Alpha Black Lotus can command
$130,000 to upwards of $100,000, collector demand is a real, real thing. And as long as there, as long as the reserve list seems that there is zero supply going to be introduced to these cards, and time goes on and they get older, disappear, and blah, 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 they're just, it's going to become more and more of a collectible. That's just the way it's going to work. And I know Sig would come on and say, well, there's school demand and there's 1994. That's definitely true. But my argument for that would say, well, that just adds, that just justifies them as excellent places to put your money even further, because they do have. But even if the cards have that are garbage, that are played nowhere, will go up just because collectors are going to, there's going to be somebody that wants them. There's going to be some segment of collectors that want them.
Yeah, and a lot of folks that put their money into the reserve list, just inevitably it will go up because there's a finite, supply of them. But like realistically, a card like Elvish, I keep bringing up just because these are cards that we talked about, and these are cards that just spiked. So I apologize if I just keep using the same, cards here for an example. But no one is really caring that they're paying, you know, that they didn't get to buy an Elvish Farmer for 40 cents and now it's like $3. It's really, again, this whole discussion comes back to dual lands, these kind of weird, interesting cards from Legends. That's cool, like Gwendolyn DeCourcy or whatever. But really, realistically, do you really care that Gwendolyn DeCourcy is your Grixis commander? Because there's like 10 more Grixis commanders that are a lot better than Gwendolyn DeCourcy. So really what we're boiling down this whole discussion and this whole outrage about the reserve list year in and year out is the top 1% of first world problems. I mean, this is really what we're talking about, that we can't, you know, that a Gwendolyn DeCourcy is not accessible, quote unquote, for the average commander player that wants Gwendolyn DeCourcy as their commander. So really what we're talking about is the 1% of this fucking, of this first, I caught myself of this first world problem. And realistically, it doesn't matter. Like, I never owned the Abyss. I can tell you honestly, everyone in here and on this podcast that will listen to it, I do not own the Abyss. I don't care if it was $500 or $5,000. It is not going to affect the way I play the game on either MTG Arena or Commander or what have you. So it all just boils down to the cards that people care about for Commander. Because really, Legacy, short of this one team split, Pro Tour, where this is great because it just fits everyone's argument, you know, now because it's coming up. Legacy has gone to, I argue that Legacy has already gone the way of Vintage. They basically don't care about the format. They don't prop the format up on Pro Tours or coverage or what have you. And it's all of that is done by design, trust me. So really, it's just a 1% first world problem that, by and large, a lot of the community doesn't really care about. Yeah. It just doesn't. And every hobby has these like collectibles that are obscure, but they're a lot of money. And maybe one day you'll own them, but you know it would be cool, but not really. Like it's part of a lot of hobbies.
Yeah, and also important to note here with all this stuff that the premium really goes primarily to the near mint stuff, right?
Yes, that was going to bring that up too. Yes.
And Mike made a good comment about
comment.
270,000 dual lands, but how many of those are near mint? That's 100% true, right?
Yes.
There might be 275,000 dual lands in circulation, but what? 30, 40% might be near mints?
Yeah, maybe. And just look at the disparity of, and even all these results spiking now. You have a near mint copy that may go that somewhere close to what the market price is. But once you hit lightly played, there's a drastic drop off.
Yeah. Especially in demand. You know, even if the price doesn't seem to reflect it, demand is definitely less. So just things to keep in mind. But at the end of the day, it is what it is. It's going to continue to happen.
Yep.
Frankly, it doesn't surprise me. The only one concern I have is that I do believe that there might be more non-Magic money that's playing into this, which could potentially cause a short-term reserveless bubble, not a Magic bubble, reserveless bubble. But outside of that, and I'm not even saying it's certainly possible. But so just be careful. Don't buy into these into the hype spikes. Wait to see what happens. But it's the best place to put your money, guys.
If you want, and the masterpiece stuff.
Yes, and the masterpieces. Yeah,
because that's like a pseudo reserve list. But again, you never really know. Yeah, it's a soft reserve list. But again, you really never really know. I mean, they could honestly go, you know, from the vault, and I'm just using that as an example. You know, Expeditions, and they just re-release all the masterpiece cards again. I mean, you just don't know. But you know, for the most part, it's pretty safe. And G Tutor brought up. On the same, there's not as big of a gap in dual lands because everyone plays those for commander, so they really don't care as long as it's playable in a sleeve. But when it comes to a lot of these other reserve list cards, there's a huge disparity in between, you know, folks that really want as near mint as you could possibly get for their collection or what have you, or just to own, and then the drastic drop off for lightly play, because a lot of these cards people don't care about. They just don't care about these cards. So a lot of the outrage and the lobbying that is done is just for cards that they want for commander. That's pretty much what it boils down to. And that's I'm starting to see that trend every time this argument comes up. They really don't care that all of the reserve list is accessible, but just the cards that they want for commander. So and the retort that I will give for that is, yes, it sucks that Underground Sea could end up being $1,000, it's $500 or whatever it is right now. That sucks. But there's a lot of alternatives to those cards that they will continue to print. You have cards like the Land Cycle and Battle Bond. You have the cards in Battle for Zendikar that can be fetched up. Yeah, it doesn't feel as good, but that min-maxing percentage of this like kind of 1% I need to win every commander game is very, very minuscule. I mean, these are top of the line, like top end first world problems. They really are.
If you ask me, shock lands are functional reprints. Like,
yeah, they are.
Yeah, so from a competitive perspective, maybe not. But look, let's also consider the fact that Magic is, you know, in the 90s and early, competitive Magic drove the market, right? That's no longer the case. It's just not the case. Yeah, for us in the financial side, Pro Tours might drive spikes and cards really shooting up might be due to some competitive play, but the casual market and the casual crowd, most of the industry has moved towards. So it's kind of like there are plenty of alternatives. And if you ask me, I think it's fantastic that Underground Sea, that somebody might have an Underground Sea and it's $1,000. That's like being able to say, hey, I've got an Action Comics, and holy crap, I've got an old school Action Comics. Like, that's a, you know, there's real fulfillment from a collector's standpoint.
Yeah. And we do point out these cards that are on the reserve list. We do talk about them as cards that are worthwhile to own. We're not really talking about it in a way that go and buy like, you know, 50 copies of X card, but just cards that are older cards that are powerful, that are interesting, that could be that may not be the price that they are today, tomorrow. And that's really what we're highlighting from the reserve list is, if any of these cards are interesting that people want to use, well, we're trying to save you the cost by identifying a card that's this price today that might be more tomorrow. But yeah, the last kind of point I want to make is, listen, these cards, again, are just not part of the everyday, day-to-day playing of Magic. There is a reason Legacy and Vintage are not on MTG Arena. There is a reason that they don't continue to prop up and make these the front runner formats of Magic the Gathering. They did that for a reason.
Yep. I think it's all that really needs to be said with the.
Yeah, it's crazy. You can definitely gain some value there, but really, I mean, if it's all going towards cards that, you know, and you're churning this value, really you're ended up going after the cards that you care about anyway. So no one cares that, you know, Goblin Wizard is a $20 card. They care about the reserve list or the reserve list stuff that really matters, which is dual lands XXX, but not about accessibility. This has nothing to do with accessibility. They just want them for their commander deck, and they don't want to pay, you know, $500, because not a lot of people play. They don't care that you need four of these for Legacy. They just want them to cost less for their commander deck. It really is about that. And the collector, the collectability, you know, stuff that does come up where, you know, folks are looking for near gem mint version of these cards, but realistic, a lot of folks aren't even don't really care about that either. So that all goes back to, you know, trader or collector X is just trading, changing hands to collector Y. But yeah, really good points made in chat. I hope that, you know, that kind of discussion came at the reserve list from really a different lens that we didn't talk about of, you know, it's just something that's going to happen when folks have extra disposable cash and income that they have that they want to park in these cards. You know, a lot of these cards that are, you know, spiking or quote unquote spiking that really weren't paying attention before, and new cards that we didn't really look at last year, it's just because really they're cheap and the floor on a lot of these cards just are increasing. And how is that done? By a lot of these cards getting bought up at one time. And that's how that's happened.
Every reserve of this card will be $5.
Yeah, or a couple bucks. But realistically, that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah,
it's good in the sense that, you know, we look at it from a financial lens and, you know, to extract value at that, you know, out of specific cards to put that elsewhere. But realistically, a lot of these cards, don't serve in the day-to-day playing of Magic. And it shows because, you know, a lot of these cards end up going right back to, you know, yeah, they'll be a higher percent or price point than before, but not really a lot of people care. So with that being said, Christopher brought up a great point on, well, how can we kind of break down this kind of cycle, this cyclical thing of Magic, over the course of a year? And these are the kind of the notes that I had. So, one aspect of this kind of yearly Magic cycle that I think isn't as strong as it used to be. I'll start off my notes here is Modern season. Short of a Modern Pro Tour, it feels that unless there is new tech, Modern season, quote unquote, isn't really a thing anymore because of all the supplemental products, the master sets, just the reprinting of any card in the Modern pool in pretty much any given point. So unless there is new technology, a major unbanning, Modern season, quote unquote, really is not a thing anymore. So we can kind of identify that as not being part of the kind of cyclical yearly nature of the Magic market. But
at least for now.
At least for now, yeah.
Yeah.
If there's a couple year gap of they don't have Modern Masters or they're not reprinting stuff at a, you know, this kind of frequency, then that all kind of changes where you see cards rebound, you see cards start to gain without a reprint. We do see that, but this kind of Modern season dictating cards, it's not really a thing anymore just because of so many reprints.
Yep.
Spring. This is really the frenzy buying of the Magic, market year round, because again, a lot of folks get tax returns. They have a lot of extra money to burn. So this is where we see a lot of the reserve list buying and or masterpiece buying and just buying in general. So in this particular case this year, Dominaria dropped. So that actually just blew the lid off of everything because so many folks were just getting back into Magic. They wanted to play Dominaria. It was a really well-constructed set. It was awesome. So that helped kind of strengthen this kind of spring buying. But mostly spring is just really folks buying up a lot of stuff to play or get into Standard or get ready for a rotation or what have you. Summer is a buyer's market. That's kind of where you want to be buying stuff at lows that came out earlier in the year, or get ready for a, in the current Standard cycle, like cards from Ixalan or something like that, where you're getting ready for major rotation. So we kind of marked this as a buyer's market during the summer. Winter, fall is more of the same. You want to be buying up stuff, during like holiday sales or deals. It's fairly quiet outside of that, but that's really where you want to be stocking up on a lot of this stuff to sell in the spring. Those are kind of the seasons. Outside of that, you have every Standard set is a hype point. I know some of you don't really get into Standard, don't really care about Standard, but Standard at least during new sets and pre-orders is definitely a real thing. I mean, we've gone through quite a few pre-order periods where there was certainly value to be had in pre-order periods and early and early results of a standard format.
Pre-orders are actually have become increasingly important.
As far as,
I mean, there is a lot of money to be made in pre-orders.
Yes.
And we can talk about strategy and all that.
There's a lot of money to be lost too, but there's a lot of losses. But standard, at least like during a hype period of a new set, regardless if the standard format is bad or what have you, folks, you know, there is value to be made there. And Pro Tour is another hype point. We have had some quiet Pro Tours, especially in the, you know, I do all the QS coverage for the Pro Tour, so I can tell you firsthand that there have been some quiet Pro Tours, but there usually is actionable stuff during a Pro Tour. So there is, between a new standard set and a Pro Tour, those are kind of very hype points during the year. And, you know, I guess when we talk about hype points, I guess every standard set and just every set in general, outside of a reprint set, like Battle Bond or Commander products, those are really good points to extract value, especially early on, or if they, you know, somehow, you know, post results or something like that. But yeah, Commander stuff, standard sets, stuff like Battle Bond are all very interesting, can have a lot of value to be extracted from them. Not so much stuff like Iconic Masters or, you know, box sets of like, you know, reprinted stuff, unless there's some new twist on them. So
yeah,
that's kind of like all my notes on that.
I would say that it's really interesting, but I think Commander season, which is basically the time around the new yearly Commander release, become an increasingly important time as well.
Yeah.
Because once the spoilers for that start, I mean, you start getting movement on all the Commander cards and cards that are build arounds and things that fit with new Commanders. So that's actually a very important time these days, is the Commander release.
The Commander cycle is pretty much all year round at this point.
Well, when they actually are releasing, like, you know,
It's more heightened during release. That is definitely true. But every set brings its own like build around or new kind of tech for a Commander set that can be, you know, can cause ripple effects throughout the Commander market, or just the market in general. But so that's kind of all my notes on this kind of cyclical thing.
I found that the optimal
kind of
time
in the market. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the best time for buying, as far as acquiring stuff to hold on to or to that you want to spec on or flip, is definitely in the wintertime, the holiday season, because that's when all the vendors are having deals or trying to get rid of stuff. That's when people are trying to shore up cash for, you know, Christmas money or holiday money, you know, whatever the holiday is in wintertime for you. Just, you know, people are trying to kind of get extra cash and just want to, you know, are cool with getting rid of their cards and getting rid of them for maybe a little cheaper. So, a holiday season is definitely a great time to buy. And then right after the you know, right around the new year, when people have their Christmas money or their holiday money, it's actually a nice little time to sell, because then people are interested in buying stuff again.
We have a couple quick questions here from G Tutor. Chance we see an $80 to $100 standard mythic this weekend of the upcoming, or the weekend of the upcoming Pro Tour?
I don't think Karn gets there.
Like 50, 60 is like the max a standard card could really go. I cannot, especially in Dominaria, where there's a lot of good cards. So a lot of cards are kind of soaking up all this value. Could
the
there just
Jace,
kind of be
the reason why Jace got there is because it, and I mean, so you might be able to make the argument for Teferi, but I don't see Teferi just demolishing, like Jace straight up defines standard on its own. Jace Vryn's Prodigy, and I just don't see.
Well, that had like a multi-format appeal, as like, you know, Teferi is seeing play in Modern, but it's still kind of, you know, a little fringe. You know, folks are still kind of trying it out. Jace definitely saw some success. I mean, at least a little bit in Modern, but that was just kind of a a perfect storm of everything. I just don't see that happening, happening as much, especially, you know, there was, you know, Origins was a good set. There was a lot of, you know, interesting stuff. There was a lot of value and a lot of different things, but there wasn't like something that could rival Jace in terms of being played that much. Lyra, Teferi, and Karn are kind of like the big three in that they're all highly impactful in standards. Yeah. So I just don't see how one can get leaps and bounds ahead of the other two.
Yep.
Yeah, there is a backlog of supply. The supply is down, but I think we're still like almost a month out for Pro Tour Dominaria. I think it starts June 1st to the 3rd. So we have like about three and a half weeks. So, you know, in that time, you know, more and more of this, you know, backlog can get caught up and, you know, prices could kind of level out again. But yeah, I think one could go up to probably maybe in the 40s, probably break 50 if it's like the premier card, everyone's playing it, whether it be Karn, Lyra, or Teferi, that's really like defining standard and all the pros are behind it. That could happen and the other cards could come down a little bit, but I just cannot see $100 mythic from this set.
Yeah. No,
I can't see a mythic dollar, not from Dominaria.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd be more interested in stuff from the Ixalan block right now and a breakout card from that rather than trying to keep extracting stuff from Dominaria. Cause largely, you know, since pre-order, this Discord and, you know, all the discussions, I mean, have been amazing for Dominaria. And we've really, I mean, I think you just can extract as much value as you can from this set now. I mean, you know, history of Benalia, Lyra, Teferi and Karn, I mean, there's not much more that we could really take out of this set. I mean, a lot of the value and a lot of the has really been capitalized on.
Unless we have, I think uncommons are interesting to look at.
I do like uncommons. Like, I don't know how much more appeal they have, especially with those theme-based boosters that big box stores is just a lot more stuff to worry about. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, the good thing is it's like you're not really gambling a whole lot. So when you know, an uncommon's like 8 to 10 cents, I mean, you can kind of justify, well, you know, for $2, I could get like 20 or 30 of these. You know, that's okay. I mean, it's like, you know, it sucks when you have like a whole stack of them basically useless, but you didn't really gamble too much. So those were the two big topics really for this cast. I mean, I think we started at, I just want to kind of see where we started this cast at, around 12:20. So we're already about 50 minutes. So let's just kind of wrap this up, Tark, with interest and maybe one more question. But yeah, we're really going to try to wrap this up. So for interest this week, trying to stay on the theme of, you know, everyone trying to build around Slimefoot and a lot of these Saproiling stuff. I did see that it didn't pop up on interest too much, but I am going with Foil Thelonite Hermit. And we saw Thelon of Havenwood. I love that card actually back when we talked about like tiny leaders and all that kind of that nonsense. But I remember you and I having discussions about that card. I remember writing an article about that card actually. And I really liked the card back then. The foils popped on those. They increased pretty considerably. I don't know if they're sticking at the new price, but Foil Thelonite Hermit is around like the $4 or $5 mark, but there's just not a lot of them out there. And that's kind of a really interesting card from Time Spiral, a pretty old set at this point. Not like super old, but old enough at this point. And it is a lord and it's an interesting card. So I really like Foil Thelonite Hermit on that one. That is a pretty good one, I think, in the $4 to $5 range. Again, folks, there's just not a lot of them. So it feels like, you know, once the hype train just keeps moving around to all these random Saproiling cards. I saw one from Invasion, something Saproiling Symbiosis. I think that was talked about from other content creators. But yeah, I haven't seen the Foil Thelonite Hermit pop up too much on stocks. But every time it does, it goes up a little bit, but there's just not, when you really look at how much of them are out there on the, you know, at least in online vendors, there's just not much.
Nice.
So I do think that can go into the mid teens, just because it's a really unique card. It is a Saproiling technically, it's from Time Spiral. So there's just not a lot of them out there.
Cool.
So go ahead, Tark.
Okay. So
I'm not going to have a reserve list pick this week simply because there's so much hype around the reserve list that I want to go elsewhere. So I actually do have a Dominaire. This was featured in the Modern Elves list. Elves list from the SCG Open this past weekend. It is Marwyn the Nurturer, which is the little 1/1 rare elf. Sits right now at about 60 cents, which is going to, I suspect, is going to continue to drop as we move into peak supply. I really like that. It's probably got some casual appeal as well, because, you know, elves are a thing in EDH, definitely a thing in Modern, and it's already proven itself as a, currently as a, only as a one of, but it was in the list. Really like it. I would say that if it ends up going bulk, it's definitely a pickup, and probably even at 50 cents. Don't think there's any reason why this could end up being a dollar, between a dollar, $1.50, somewhere in there. Next up, I've got straight up from interest. I found this really interesting card. I didn't even know existed. Called Inundate. It's from Eventide. It's really for the blue mages out there. Triple blue and three to return all non-blue creatures to their owner's hands. Super interesting effect, especially if you're a blue player and you have a blue deck. You can just bounce back the rest of your play group's team. Supply is, it's not actually, it's quite, I would say it's actually quite low for the non-foils. Which are sitting at about $2, and the foils are, there's not much of a multiplier. The foils are around $3 to $4. So I definitely like both the non-foil and the foil of this. I think this could easily be the $4 non-foil and then maybe a $6 to $8 foil. And then next up I've got another card which shocks me that it's still as cheap as it is, and I know we've talked about it a few times in the past on Discord, but Matter Reshaper is still like $2, and I continue to be baffled how Thought Not Seer can be $6 and Matter Reshaper is $2, $2 to $3, when they're both core four ofs in the Eldrazi list, the aggressive Eldrazi list. Reality Smasher is also in there, but Reality Smasher is a little bit in between at around $3 to $4. So I like Matter Reshaper a lot. Still quite cheap, and I do not believe that there's going to be a reprint. I know people always talk about, they're scared that these cards are going to get reprinted. I think these cards are too unique. These Eldrazi cards are a little too unique. And I don't think we're going to have a Eldrazi commander deck that comes anytime soon. I just don't see that happening. So I like that one. And finally, my last pick, I had several today, but my last pick is Commander from Commander 2015. That is Mizzix of the Ismagnus, which is this really cool card that, obviously, Commander 2015 was around experience counters, and basically when you start casting instants or sorceries, Mizzix gives you experience counters, and then your instants and sorceries get cheaper for the experience counters you have. So it's really fun for the red-blue mages that like to do all kinds of things and make their cards cheaper and their instants and sorceries cheaper. It sits at around, it's under $2, and there's very little supply. There's about, looks like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 11. There's about 15 copies, looks like, on TCG Player. Maybe 14 at $2 or less. Sorry, less than that. There's about 10 to 12 copies under $2. That seems to me like another one that could easily be Commander. It does a lot of cool stuff, and red and blue is, you know, people love their red and blue in the age. So that's it for me. I had a solid four this week. So those are my picks.
Yeah. I talked about this one in Discord. I just kind of remembered. I want to put the pen to paper kind of thing just so Guillaume can counter-track this. And I have bought into this, so I just kind of felt it should be on the cast, you know, win, loss, or what have you. This was one I picked for Standard. It's a Rowdy Crew. I talked about this on Discord. They were, like, you know, a quarter at the time. They might have increased, I mean, solely just because they were so cheap. But really, I mean, my reasoning was, whenever I see a mythic go from a zero, especially one that's going to be in Standard for a long time in Ixalan, a mythic that goes from a zero play to a four of play in any kind of deck is one that's going to pique my interest. So I definitely want that on the QS cast tracker, just for, you know, posterity purposes, and just so I have that transparency out there. But yeah, that is Rowdy Crew non-foil. But yeah, I just liked, you know, I mentioned this earlier. I think a lot of the stuff that I would want to be in more of is not Dominaria, but while there's, you know, there was cards there to get value from, I think a lot of it has already been, you know, worn out and talked about this at this point. And at, you know, any spike at this point is just going to be Pro Tour hype. But I want to be in cards that are from Ixalan and rivals for Ixalan, especially because they're just going to be in standard for a long time as well. So yeah, Rowdy Crew. Yeah. So those are my two. I did notice, I don't want to really, I mean, I'm not going to really have these cards that are going to be on the tracker, but Foil Emrakul, the Promised End, I saw this creeping up a lot over the past week. That's just a foil that's been really good for a long time. And I guess in staying with the Saproiling stuff, it's interesting. This has a reprint. But the original foils of Vertaloth the Ancient, the Invasion copies only, have been increasing. And that's also a really powerful card for that tribe. But again, I know there's a reprint, but it's just interesting because I see the Invasion version of the foil just continuously increase. And those are at about $4-ish dollars right now. That could probably break into the double digits just because of the old frame, the nostalgia and what have you. But yeah, do keep in mind, I don't think it's going to, you know, shoot up to like $30 or $35 or anything like that just because of the reprint. But the old framing Invasion foil is definitely something to watch. No. Awesome. So that's the original Invasion Vertaloth the Ancient foil. And I talked about Emrakul, the Promised End foils. But no, I think I'm just going to stick with Foil Thelenite, Hermit, and Rowdy Crew. But I just wanted to make sure that I talked about them on cast at least. Ah, hell, you could throw Emrakul on there.
All right, cool.
That's a really good foil. I mean, it might be a little too late on that, but these are up at around like 40, 50 bucks already. I don't know really much how much these can increase further.
All right, guys. Well, I think we're pushing an hour.
Yep. Actually, don't put Emrakul on there, Guillaume. Just stick to the first two. I just wanted to document those cards. Just those two. I'm good. I'm good. All right. Yeah, folks, that is going to wrap it up for this week. Yeah, that is at an hour. Tark, I know you got to go. So let's wrap up real quickly. Where can they find you on the internet? Should insiders or anyone want to get a hold of you?
Yep, I'm at @the_Tark, T-A-R-K, on Twitter. Also, I do some work with the guys over at the MTG Finance Center Facebook page. And as always, you can catch me in the QS Discord.
Yep, you can find me in the QS Insider Discord. You can find my work on Quiet Speculation every week. So that's about going to do it. Thanks, everyone, for joining in. Sorry for the crazy timing on this one. But, yeah, this should be up by tomorrow. And enjoy the infographics going up on the website and Guillaume's analysis. So thanks, everyone. Have a good one. Take care.
All right. See you guys. Bye.